Okay, so we are live here today in Boulder, and I am so delighted to have Marcy Goldman with us again. And we were just in the middle of talking about the integration of the masculine and feminine, and I was talking about how the earliest deities that we see in India, well, first, the earliest of deities really is like the Ganga, the rivers, the nature herself, and then the idea of like the river becomes embodied into a physical form, and that those physical forms are very well, if we go back to that notion of the river is always in balance with the banks of the river. So there's this, if you will, a masculine-like container for the flow of that river. So we see that both the masculine and feminine are present in that earlier sign of what we would call the feminine, which was the Ganga River. And then that became embodied into these deity forms that represented both masculine and feminine. So I was saying that a lot of these statues you would look at, even a so-called masculine deity like the dancer Shiva Nataraja, is actually quite feminine in his appearance is actually very feminine. You can't really tell if it's man or woman. And the integration of the masculine and feminine is something that the yogic traditions say that the feminine, many thousands of years, actually took leave of her body, and because she didn't feel respected or honored or safe. And I find this really interesting because when we look at, like, what is the feminine, you know, and the feminine can be, although it can be super ferocious and very, like, don't mess with me kind of aspect to her, she's also quite reflective. She's like the moon. She's like the moon's light, where she can be known to yield when she needs to yield and move forward when she needs to move forward. She's very malleable. And there's a sense of a flow that is that aspect of the feminine. And for one reason or another, and many say that due to patriarchy, the feminine disembodied and went away. And we're at a time in history where this age of truth, they call it the Satyuga, is dawning. And we would say that corresponds with the light of the feminine returning, and this idea of fullness. What does it mean to be full inside yourself? And the reason I bring up this whole aspect of integration of masculine and feminine is, well, one, I'm really learning what that means inside myself. I have been ever since I began yoga many, many years ago. And now with a meditation practice, I'm really starting to understand that a fullness comes from deep inside, sourced deep inside me. And that feeling of joy that the yogi said was at the core of every human being was this aspect of joy. They call it the Ananda Shakti, or the layer of bliss. That bliss body that we all have it. We all are born with it, and yet we don't know how to access it. For one reason or another, we've crimped that light. We've crimped our potential. We've crimped our joy. And there are so many reasons why that happens. But this idea of balance between the two is something that we really wanted to get into today, Marcy, with your work, your history with Susan Weed, and your apprenticeship, and what you learned with her about this weaving of the masculine and feminine. So I'd love for you to jump in.
Sure. I love this conversation of balance, because when Susan taught this to me, it had changed my entire way of how I took care of myself and what my goals were. Because before, my goals were very linear and masculine. And I wanted to be healthy. I wanted to be a certain weight. I wanted to be look a certain way. And it was measurable and very linear. And what Susan taught me about balance, she did a example of walking on a tightrope. And she walked on an imaginary tightrope, and she said, what am I doing? while I'm on this tightrope, and try to picture somebody on a tightrope with one foot. And what they're doing is they're moving. They're in constant motion, dynamic small movements. That is what keeps them balanced. And as soon as they really stand still, they'll fall over. And then she said, and if you put a long rod in their hands, because the longer they stretch out that rod, like the more balance that they have. So to me, our concept of balance is really throwing our whole culture off. Because when we think of it, we think of this stagnant point in time that you're supposed to get to when everything feels good and I've had the perfect breakfast and I've meditated before I woke, you know, got out of bed and I got my exercise in before noon and everything is perfect. That's what we think balance is. And I just talked to a client yesterday and she said, how many times has that happened? And she was like, never. You know, literally, like, her idea of balance, she had never accomplished it. And so what does that do to your psyche, you know, when you feel like a failure every single day because you're really not matching that picture of balance in your head?
Right.
And I just find it so fascinating, Jeannie, where that image came from. It is so masculine. It is so rigid and linear, and yet it's ingrained in all of us from, like, you know, from babies.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't allow for another side of ourselves to really be seen. You know, it does pervade today, and I think part of it, you know, I was saying earlier in a conversation with you is, you know, I go back to nature, and I was just in the mountains for a few days and just feeling like so humbled by the power in nature and the rhythms that she has. And if we really listened and were able to follow the rhythms more closely, I think we would find that the masculine and the feminine parts of ourselves would yield and push forward when they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, instead, we've been in a culture where that hasn't really been honored, and I think we're really still struggling with how do we come into balance? And balance again is a tricky word. You know, in yoga we say balanced action, which means that sometimes, you know, the force of, I would say, sort of a masculine force is leading the way. And other times the feminine is leading the way, and you're just sort of doing this sort of dance with one another. It's like, when do I need to sit down and do my books at my desk? And when do I just like spontaneously walk out the door and go have lunch with someone, for example? Like, you know, when do we have that freedom to kind of take a back road home? Like, you know, not do that routinized, and I'm really good at routine, that routinized way of eating or exercising, or, you know, and I'm guilty of this. I really love my routines. I feel like I'm held a lot in routine, and yet I love when I just kind of throw it up in the air and I have a spontaneous afternoon, or it's just so healthy for us. The feminine is not, she meanders more. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting thing when we think about, like, being full. What does that mean in relationship to the masculine and the feminine? How do we learn to have structure sort of around our food, or, you know, no gluten, or, you know, whatever it is that we're struggling with? Of thinking of my own family, it's like, you know, everyone's like going gluten-free and for good reasons, and yet it can become very one of my friends on my hut trip was saying, gosh, don't you think it's like we're just like over the moon with all this, can't have this, can't have that? Like, where is this sort of spontaneity in it? And I don't have the answer to that, although I do feel like there is something in me that I have a lot of structure, but in that there is this freedom of spontaneity. And we would say that the feminine has a lot of spontaneity to her. She's not rigid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first we have to get rid of the word balance, or we really have to, in our minds, transform it and see it in a different way. And so balance, like you've been saying, is dynamic and moving. And so no one is out of balance. That's the myth. No one is out of balance, because even on our blood sugar, if we looked at it, low blood sugar is the exact balance of having high blood sugar. Like, the body is constantly balancing itself. So if we had, if we drank coffee first thing in the morning and then had a banana and a bagel, our blood sugar is going to go up. So it's natural that we're going to have low blood sugar at some point, 2 to 3 hours after that. So, the body is always doing what it's supposed to do naturally. And I like to say, I'd like to flow kind of more wavy rather than spiky.
So that's interesting about blood sugar. That's something that I've really wanted to understand better, is this whole idea of like balancing, like, I know, here I go using that word again, like, yeah. You know, there is some sort of understanding that we have to come to around, like, what foods are going to spike that, or what foods are going to kind of level that. Are you saying that the body actually will naturally kind of come into its own?
The body is always balancing itself. When there's an infection, the balance is to have a fever to kill the infection. So when we have a wound that's infected, the balance is for the wound to pus, so it can move the infection out of the wound.
Right.
So, yeah.
So in a way, it's trusting in this incredible, embodiment that we've been given. I mean, our bodies are so. We always used to say, our bodies never lie. They really are so intelligent, and yet we are always trying to kind of maybe override that with our brains or our intellectual knowledge, or I always, my kids were sick. I'd always be like, wow, they just have to kind of be in that fever and know that there's so much going on internally, not just like that they're moving an infection out, but they're actually getting smarter or something. Like, my kids would come out of a fever and be reading better, and like their next week at school would be like they had grown like 3 inches during that week.
Wow.
It was just crazy. So I always... that inner pulse of where we might think, looking out my window right now, it's snowing, and we can't see what's happening under the earth right now, but there's so much that's happening in this sort of ripe time of spring, but we can't see it. And I think that's true of our bodies and that inner intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And we could go as far as to say, like, there's an inner intelligence that in yoga we would call the feminine. And that feminine aspect is really the source of your being, and that it's highly intelligent, highly intelligent. And yet we've pushed it away in many realms of thinking that the brain was in charge, or that the intellect led the way, or our knowledge, which is all very important. But what I think is happening right now is this return to trusting in a deeper sourced place inside. So when you're speaking, I was like, oh my God, this just really reminds me of, how we talk about Shakti, which is really that inner vibratory essence of what you could call your source energy. It's like your sun inside. And that is your digestion. It's all the inner workings. And I love what you're saying, because I think that, as a mom, I always I'm always trying to help my kids feel better, and they're just sort of like, Mom, I just need to rest, you know, like, let my body do its thing. And
Yeah. Well, I love that. So I guess if we had to, like, be a little structured in our understanding of this, how to come more into our feminine, we have to have a new definition of balance, which might be flow or dynamic movement, or that yoga term that you said, what balance is. And then we would have to stop trying to fix ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because when we are overweight, we want to fix ourselves to get thin. But if we look at the feminine perspective, the weight is not the problem. It's the solution to most, the number one cause of weight gain is malnourishment, dieting, not eating enough calories, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
That now I find that really interesting, because there's this thing that we call in yoga that the crimping of that feeling of fullness inside is what we call a mala, or a root contraction. And that root contraction is really this feeling of I'm not enough, which I find really interesting when you go to think of the solution we think is dieting, when in fact you're saying we actually need more calories. We need more food. We need more. I find that just utterly fascinating, because I think that we're kind of feeding this mala when we feel like we have to keep, you know, saying no or less. You know, there's this whole thing in the tantric tradition that's like affirming life, saying yes, that there's more and more and more of yourself to get to know. And I'm not saying like feed your face more. I'm saying like sustenance is that feeling of being sated is a really healthy experience.
It is. I'm just like getting so excited.
Jump in.
It is. This has been my whole understanding after working with clients, you know, for almost 15 years, is that we really do need to focus on eating more.
Mm.
And so the concept of cleansing is very disturbing to me, because again, it just sets up the model of needing less. Michael Pollan, who, you know, the food god guy, you know, on his approach, his statement, real food, not too much, and mostly plants. I find it really disturbing, because I think, you know, he's never had a weight problem. And just to say the word not too much, like it just feeds into this cultural limitation that we are constantly battling within ourselves. So
yeah.
we end up over consuming on other things, because the body craves energy. So we end up, you know, over consuming on calories that don't have any nutritional value, in the form of, you know, junk, quote unquote, junk food, cigarettes, coffee, stimulants that give us some kind of energy, but not the real grounded energy. So then we worry, then we say, oh, I shouldn't eat, you know, I'm already overindulging. But overindulging is different than eating more nutrients.
Mm. So interesting. So how do we educate ourselves? I mean, I know that you offer courses, and are we just not listening? You know, I think that's something that I consider a lot, is like, am I truly listening to my body right now? What is it asking for? You know, that goes not just with food, but movement and like I was saying, rhythms. Like this morning, for example, it's dark now, and it was really snowing, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a long meditation this morning and skip my workout.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and it was just this really beautiful morning of quiet and just kind of perfect for the weather. And I felt like I really listened, and there was something really joyful about listening. And so I guess my question is, how do we come to understand, one, that we need more nutrients? Like, how do we know that? And then how do we know how what we're choosing is really what we need?
Great question. Most of us can expect that we're on some level malnourished, just because it's hard in this day and age to get all the nutrition we need, because we're not spending the majority of our days preparing food, raising food, or so we just have to work harder than we do at it. And so, and the thing about trusting and listening, like, you have such a solid intuition and such good listening skills because of your meditation practice and yoga practice. And that is the exact right medicine that you gave yourself this morning to bypass the workout and meditate longer. No one can prescribe that to you, but that was perfect medicine because you listened and it told you. So in order to listen, we have to trust our appetite. And that's very difficult for people who emotionally eat or eat out of exhaustion and tiredness or eat because they're stressed. So there's ways that I work with people one-on-one, especially, to get their true appetite really strong, because I want people to have a very strong appetite. And a weak appetite is a sign of being less healthy. And a strong appetite is a sign of robust health. So that true appetite will lead you, just like, you know, your choice this morning, to the right foods and the right medicine. And it really just works that way. It's so much simpler than following a prescriptive diet.
Yeah,
The diet.
Yeah.
Are helpful. They're helpful guidelines. I mean, I like challenges, you know, to kind of get me going, get the momentum. I did a 30-day bone broth challenge, and that really helped people and myself eat more, get more bone broth in my body. But there were some days that it's just too hard to follow the challenge, and you've got to just listen to that. If you're following a guide, you've got to always adjust it to the reality of your life.
Yeah, you know, I would love for you to just tell us a little bit. Bone broth is really, I would say, like, in the forefront of, you know, you can get it in cafes now. And, you know, it seems to be such a nutrient, is that the right word, dense liquid that we can nourish ourselves with, especially this time of year. Do you think in the winter to spring, that this is, you know, I love that this is happening, because I would always go into these, you know, like a great juice bar, and I'd be like, oh, like, it's freezing out. And I just, like, I mean, sometimes I want something really cold like that, but often I want something warm if it's chilly and cold out. And that, it, you know, that warm digestion thing seems to be something that my intuition goes, yeah, it's snowing out, and it's, you know, it may warm up in a few days, but right now I need something really kind of nourishing and warm. So I'm wondering if you would just, for a few minutes, just go into a little bit about bone broth.
Well, it is a fad of today, but it is not new, and it's been around for generations. It's a traditional food. I don't know how early back it dates, but I mean, but it goes as far back as we can remember or in record, because people were using the whole animal. So it's very much that nose to tail eating, where you didn't waste anything. And so if you're living on a farm or wherever, you might have eaten the muscle meat, and then you had the bones, and you cooked the bones for a couple days, one day, 24 hours to 48 to 72 hours, cooking the bones in water. And you're extracting some super deep nutrition, a lot of minerals and vitamins from the bones, a lot of different kinds of protein. And they're the proteins that balance the muscle proteins that you get from muscle meat. So it's really important to have both, actually. And the collagen in the marrow and in the joints of certain bones is a really super nutritious protein. It's very good for our own joints and giving us healthy skin, like really soft skin. Collagen is what we want to last in our skin for, to make us, you know, younger and beautiful and less wrinkly. So we want to drink it for those purposes, for loose, lucrative, or lubricated joints. And the amino acid profile in bone broth is also extraordinary. There's a lot of glycine and glutamine, and certain people have to be careful if they have very compromised digestive tracts. They might do well with what's called a meat broth, which is when you cook maybe a whole chicken with the meat and the bones, and you drink that broth, which is cooked a little less than a traditional bone broth, and that will get you less inflamed and ready to take on the bone broth that has more amino acids.
Wow.
So it's traditional. Yeah.
I know that intuitively I really love those broths. They just feel very nourishing to me. So, again, that's, you know, my intuition just saying that. It's not, I mean, it is very cool that I can go to a grocery store and go to a cafe and get that these days. I feel like that's part of evolution in a way. It may be a fad, but it feels like we're really coming to another understanding of nourishment. And, of course, you know, if you were a vegetarian, you could get a really yummy vegetarian broth. Is that correct?
King's broth is sold in Whole Foods, I know, in the Rocky Mountain region, which is this wonderful veggie broth, different flavors, and that has a lot of high mineral content, a lot of nutrients in there.
And that is, we really are mineral depleted at this time on the planet.
Yes.
So it's interesting that we're actually creating these foods that are actually nourishing us with the things that we really apparently need.
That we're craving them, you said?
Well, yeah, and I just find it interesting, you know, as evolution goes, that even if it's, you know, a so-called fad, it's like, as you say, it's an old thing. Our grandparents were probably making, I think my grandparents were making broths. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we're listening on one level. I feel like evolution is, I always like to see like food fads, just to see like, oh, where is like the real depth of this? There's somewhere in here, there's actually a key kind of teaching for all of us that we actually need this and we're creating what we need.
Yeah, it is beautiful that it comes around, and there are a lot of people doing this. Listen to the land.
Wow, there's so much in the realm of filling up. And I feel like when I think about this conversation and kind of bring us back to this point that I think you made so beautifully, is that actually I don't want to say all cleanses are bad or anything like that, but you know, I typically still do an Ayurvedic cleanse. It seems to work for me. My body likes it. I feel like my blood sugar levels seem to balance. I feel really stable and so forth. But what I'm hearing from you that I really love is that we don't need to deplete ourselves. We actually need to be almost filling ourselves more.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that thinking really, it eliminates a lot of the disordered eating and the disordered manifestations of feeling like we have to deprive ourselves to be healthy. So it's just such a great mental shift if for your listeners to make and see what happens.
And you would say that really it's much more about a deep listening or an intuition around what your body really wants. Again, it's like that's a little loose. And at the same time, is that what you're saying? You know, it's
there are certain guidelines that I think really help create a soft container, because for certain eaters, for certain people, to just eat intuitively freaks people out, because, like I said, you know, their appetite is craving foods that aren't nutritious. So the middle way, you know, is to think of having breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Have breakfast, lunch, and dinner be your rhythm. We talked about rhythms earlier. Mm-hmm. That's one food tradition that is not a myth, and there's a lot of beauty in that. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Eating at high noon, you know, eating in the middle of the day, that's a meal that I find a lot of people skipping because they're so busy. But that could be a really important meal for people who used to skip it, and it could really change things for them. I kind of lost my train of thought, but getting, I think we were talking about, oh yeah, being intuitive. So that will help if you focus on breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if you focus on some of those nutrient-dense foods that are actually in my meal plan, if people want to get my free meal plan, and I'm not just saying this to sell you anything because it's free, and you'll get on my newsletter and you can unsubscribe if you want, but this is a really great resource for a lot of nutrient-dense foods. There's 7 days of breakfast, lunch, and dinner snacks, and my all-time favorite herbal infusions, which is another great way to get a lot of nutrition. So the directions on how to make herbal infusions are in that meal plan as well.
And how do they access that again?
That is on my website at marciegoldman.com, and it's MARCIE. GOLDMAN.com. You can find it from the homepage, but you could also do /meal plan and you can sign up right there.
Awesome. Well, I definitely want to look into that. So I think we're kind of at a wrap here, but I wanted just to see if there's anything else you want to bring in around, you know, we were talking about the balance between masculine and feminine, the idea of, you know, I feel like we hit on this idea of being full, and we talked about balance, but in a way that we kind of take the word balance out.
Yeah.
Just to kind of summarize a little bit about what we went through a lot of different things here. Being nutrient and mineral full, I feel like is,
yeah,
we touched on that, and you know, following your intuition more when we're really deeply seated inside ourselves, which is something that I'm always trying to bring people back to, is the source from within is highly intelligent. It's actually the bliss body that the yogis talked about that often isn't heard because it's been neglected, and it's that feminine part of ourselves that is actually quite in tune. And I feel like what you're saying is like to come back to that, to know that. And maybe that means that, you know, we immerse ourselves more in nature, we take up a meditation practice, or we learn to tune in back into who we really are, which is highly intelligent, very in tune with what would serve and what wouldn't serve. And I think that, you know, when we're not in tune, that's when we start to make poor decisions around maybe our choices for food or choices of activities or things that, you know, are going to deplete versus serve.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'd be happy to come. I want to add one other point.
Yes.
Masculine and feminine. So in nutrition, in my understanding, the masculine of nutrition is taking a lot of supplements and drinking your meals and not tasting. The feminine way of nutrition is to taste and to use your senses and to cook and to smell and to feel the texture and engage your senses while you're eating. So there's room for both. You know, I take supplements sometimes, less and less in my life, but a smoothie for me on a rare occasion, because I do, for me, that's a little more, you know, blending things, drinking it all these things in one, with one taste, because you lose a lot of the different tastes. And when you make a smoothie, it all becomes one, which is sweet. So that's just a little understanding of masculine and feminine in food, is just to really engage your senses. And I know you and I have talked about that before.
I love that, though. That is just a great point to bring back, because how many of us are, you know, again, it's sort of a time thing where, again, I feel like the feminine is, it's not that she can't be quick and move here and there, but it's she has much more of a spaciousness about her. And so we're living in a time when time is something that we are going to have to learn to expand. And that's something that, again, meditation is going to teach us, because source energy is vast. It's kind of this crazy thing. It's like Einstein time and linear time. And so I think what you're saying is, it's really fascinating to me that, you know, I can see myself, you know, a lot of times I'll just take a shake because it's the easiest thing to do. And I'm out the door. Some mornings are like that. And then, you know, it was so beautiful to be on this hut trip, because we each took time to prepare a meal. And I actually took time to really prepare oatmeal in the morning, like really good steel cut oats, and, you know, had, you know, coconut, you know, just this yummy coconut on top, and dried fruit, and just, you know, took the time to make a beautiful meal in the morning. And, you know, just the ways that we can really bring food into, and meals into, a sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, it's like, it's so easy and yet so hard in our time sort of driven world, this very linear time that we place ourselves in, part of what we do. And yet, how do we expand that? How do we move into sacred time? And I feel like that's, again, what the feminine is calling forth in each of us, is like, you know, on some of those days, you just light a candle and you know, start chopping and you make that broth, and you just, you know, that fullness of preparing a meal can be so, so healing. Just, I know this conversation could go on, but I really love this aspect of what you just brought in. It just brought up all this other stuff for me around time and space. And, you know, I think when we're rushed, our digestions are rushed. And when we're, you know, again, if we're too slow, we're too slow. But if we're in that place where it's, you have an anxious morning, I call them the anxious morning, where I don't have to be anywhere and I can just make a cup of tea and I can meditate and I can, you know, have that kind of spaciousness, everything seems to unfold in a beautiful way.
Yes, and I do believe nutrients heal. And so the more you can get in, the more you will have an intuitive draw to buy those bones or buy those veggies and start chopping naturally without it being on your calendar, without saying, I really need to do this. Like, you'll find yourself cooking more. Because your body will crave the nutrients, and it'll crave the experience. And so that's been my really passion and desire in health, is to find that natural way of self-care that's not trying to fix myself. So in summary, we talked about the new definition of balance, which is, you know, we're balancing, or we're in flow, we're in dynamic flow, and we can never be out of balance. So we can stop shaming ourselves for having extremes, because it's part of it. To stop trying to fix ourselves, but instead try to nourish ourselves.
I love that.
It's so much kinder and easier. And then thirdly, trusting in our intuition and doing the daily practices that strengthen that intuitive muscle, which would be a yoga practice or a meditation practice or a cooking practice, is what unblocks that flow that you said can be so blocked in the center of the core of our being, that is our joy and our light.
That is so beautiful, Marcy. I love this conversation. I wish we could just keep going. Thank you so much for coming on again and talking to us. And again, you can find Marcy at marcygoldman.com, correct?
Yes, and I'm mostly on Instagram and Facebook these days, and Periscope, if you have any Periscope peeps.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. I really adore talking to you and just love the approach that you have to nourishment, really. It's super refreshing. It's like there's no sort of like, I'm sure you have your protocols and the way in which you're helping people, but I love this. It's almost like you're saying, you like return to yourself in a way, like you listen closely because the knowledge and the wisdom is there. And bringing us back, which is, I think, again, we share this in our work, is bringing people back to trusting deeply in themselves and deeply into what your body is asking for, what is needing, and going with that. So thank you. Love you so much, and I'm sure we'll continue this conversation.
Yes, I hope so.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.